This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Minneapolis getting ready for unrest as the Chauvin trial's entering that final phase. The jury has it. Walter Mondale dead at the age of 93. Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney broadcasting on the road from Florida. And let's jump to, I think, really the breaking story is Walter Mondale. And when you think of Walter Mondale, you remember perhaps his bid for the presidency, but also the fact that he was the vice president for Jimmy Carter, and he was somebody who could cut across both sides of the aisle, because as much as he was a definite Democrat, he had friends who were Republicans, and he had such a wicked sense of humor, according to many who knew Fritz, that he had a way to charm, let's say, somebody who had a completely different view on whatever it was, politically speaking, that was being, you know, tackled. And I think there's going to be a lot of outpouring, certainly from older generations who remember Walter Mondale and remember, again, his run for presidency and the fact that Geraldine Ferraro was the female vice president candidate under his ticket, but very, very, very big news, needless to say. The other breaking story is, it's not necessarily breaking, but it's one that's been talked about for such a long time, and now I guess it's just official, is the fact that the jury, it's in their hands now when it comes to what happens with Derek Chauvin, the ex-cop from Minneapolis. There's three charges that are being looked at for the crime of choking George Floyd, the 9 minutes plus, and all the testimony, of course, is well wrapped up in the closing arguments. And now it is just a matter of what the jury, you know, ultimately decides: assault or reasonable policing. What are some of the, I guess, key takeaways or things that will be considered when the jury looks at what their decision is? And again, there's a couple of different routes they could take, and I think that's the reason why there's so much concern as to what will happen depending on what that verdict is. The fear is what can erupt if Chauvin isn't in fact found guilty of any of the three charges. There's no way to necessarily peel back the minds of the jurors. Of course, there's no way to do that. People spend thousands and thousands and millions of dollars to analyze possible juries and what could happen and which way they could go. And in this case, I think that the prosecutors did everything they could in what they presented. And in fact, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, maybe even just last week, that you had the blue wall. What was so, I guess, stunning about this trial, and I don't know if stunning is the right word, but I guess what was so unique about, that's a better word, unique about this trial, is that you had so many police officers saying that that wasn't policing. You had the chief of police saying that that wasn't policing, and you don't see that in the wall of blue. Very hard pressed to find anyone wearing the uniform that said that this was just policing. So the bottom line is, you know, a big decision will take place, and maybe this week it'll happen, or perhaps it gets bounced into next week. A lot of people assume when they look at juries, particularly this kind of a jury and what we're talking about here, and it's so hard to convict a police officer, let alone of a potential of any three choices they could go. The thing that's going to be, I think, fascinating to watch, I guess, from that perspective, is how long does it take for this jury? The theory in analyzing juries is if it's quick, you know, if they come back quickly, then it's in favor of the prosecution. If they come back and it takes, you know, past the week, they're wrestling with something. But, you know, again, we're looking at that in the magic eight ball, the tea leaves. We're trying to get into the minds of jurors, which is, of course, like I said, what so many people in civil cases, especially, but in criminal cases, too, they try to figure out what, you know, what could possibly happen here. Well, attorneys made those closing arguments in the murder trial of the former cop, leaving the jurors again to make sense of two entirely different arguments to determine whether Derek Chauvin is guilty of murder or manslaughter and George Floyd's death last May. Throughout the trial, as I said, the prosecutor set it up. They argued that Chauvin's knee pressed against 46-year-old George Floyd's neck for the counterfeit dollar that he was called to the carpet on when that phone call was made to bring in the police, and after that, when he was handcuffed and face down in the street, led to his death by the loss of oxygen. The defense arguing underlying heart issues and meth and fentanyl in the system caused his death while he struggled with police. And of course, images were a big part of this, video clips, visual aids, all of that. That was part of what the jury saw throughout this whole thing. And during the statements, you know, the closing statements, Chauvin took notes on what he has been doing on a yellow legal pad, and so did the jurors. So now it's up to the jurors again, as I've said this now several times, to make the decision on what happens here. And the fear is, depending on which way it goes, is are there enough National Guard standing by, guardsmen standing by, and that's what's happening while this deliberation goes on, to make sure that the city is completely covered, depending on what happens here. Besides the Chauvin trial and what happens with the jury and the ultimate outcome of that, there has been a big war for decades. And perhaps even before that, if you looked at the history of the country, on guns. And the Supreme Court on Monday declined to take up three challenges to a federal ban on gun ownership for people convicted of nonviolent crimes, which, of course, would disappoint Second Amendment advocates who were hoping a more conservative court would chip away at the restriction. By not taking the appeals, the highest court let stand a series of lower court rulings, follow this bouncing ball, that prohibits people convicted of driving under the influence, making false statements on tax returns, and selling counterfeit cassette tapes from owning a gun. Again, letting that stand. And the decisions on Monday, which were handed down without explanation, are the latest in the series, of course, of what's happening with the Supreme Court skirting the Second Amendment question. The High Court has last issued, and I just looked this up, major gun rights rulings in 2008 and 2010, cases, in fact, that got rid of, struck down, if you will, handgun restrictions in the District of Columbia and Chicago. So gun right groups are vowing to continue to press the issue. And, you know, several of the court's conservatives signaled in recent years that they were interested in revisiting the issue. It's not clear why they chose not to do so at this time. All right, hang with us. Coming up next on the flip side, your thoughts as we go to the mailbag.
If there's a sudden disaster and you can't get to the grocery store or they're all out of food, what would you do? You'll wish you had emergency food to get you through the crisis. And that's why we're here. We're MyPatriotSupply.com, America's leading source of emergency food. Our food lasts for up to 25 years, and millions of families trust us for their disaster survival. Won't you join us? Unlike other food companies, we don't skimp on calories. Our meals give you more than 2,000 calories per day. Why? Because that's what you need to survive any challenging crisis. And right now, you can save $200 on our popular 3-month emergency food kit. Just go to MyPatriotSupply.com and place your order. We ship fast, 2 to 3 days max, and your food arrives discreetly right to your door. So order today and save $200 at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
According to the Wall Street Journal, the new book, The Great Devaluation, is the number one business book in the world. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta, two-time national best-selling author and owner of Advantage Gold, hands down the highest-rated gold firm in the country. We help investors put physical metals inside their IRAs. My first book, Gold is a Better Way, sparked a movement. My new book, The Great Devaluation, is the number one book in the country. I believe every investor should own physical metals. It's why I'm giving away my best-selling book to anyone with an IRA with over $100,000 for free. Call 800-900-8000 to get the bestseller, The Great Devaluation, sent directly to your door. That's 800-900-8000. The new decision is now obvious. Don't you deserve to do it with the best? Call 800-900-8000 for your free book today. That's 800-900-8000.
Hi, this is Kate Delaney, and I have a confession to make. I'm addicted to journaling. So many of the ideas I get from my radio show or books hit me at weird times, and I need to write them down. Does that happen to you? So I decided to create my own journal with my pal Jackie. Looking for a great gift for your wife, sister, mother, aunt, friend, or boss to end 2020 or kick off 2021? My girlfriend's gratitude journal includes inspirational quotes and loads of room to write, and it just dropped. Here's the best part. You'll also get a copy of my Forbes book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Increase your odds, win big, and become extraordinary. It's loaded with ways to chart your own life and filled with the success habits with some of the biggest names on the planet, stuff they shared with me that can help catapult you. Here's the best part. For both hardcover books, it's just $29.99. Yep, go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer. Again, all of it for just $29.99. I got the shipping covered. What are you waiting for? Just go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer today.
Now let's talk about the mail. Can we talk about the mail, please, Mac? I'm dying to talk about the mail with you all day, okay?
Let's get in the mailbag. Let's get in the mailbag.
Hey, hey, once again, broadcasting from Florida. And looking at what's going on in the Sunshine State, it's pretty interesting. We're here in the mailbag, the on-the-road mailbag, and some news was actually made in Florida. And it's interesting, I was driving down 275 today, and I was listening to what, you know, I was listening to one of the big news stations out of Tampa, and they were talking about the pandemic. They were talking about masks. They were talking about all things Florida. They were talking about the situation in Miami a few weeks ago versus the situation on the Gulf Coast and what that had been like. And I was thinking, were they stretching? Were they filling time? No, because this is the buzz. And this is the buzz in your land and mine. And I got a lot of questions about traveling. So, you know, without further ado, let's dive into this. This one is from Dean, who listens to us in Iowa. Kate, jealous that you're getting a chance to jump on a plane. I heard you mention that on a previous show. And I think you said that the flight was fine. Wondering if you had any more deets on that. And also, what did it feel like to really travel? Well, thanks for that. And what did it feel like to travel? It felt funny at first because it's been, you know, over a year since I've been on a plane, but I felt like there was social distancing in the airport, and I think I said this previously, there were people wearing masks, and people, I'll tell you, looking around, people, to me, people are weary, and I got the sense that people weren't quite as weary, and maybe that's just my perspective, but that's what I felt, and it was smooth. It was smooth in and out, and It felt like being on the road again, which of course I am on the road and broadcasting from, as you mentioned, the Sunshine State. And I felt pretty safe. And I talked to people in line. I had to get a car, and I was talking to a couple where they had a pharmacy in Wichita, and they were telling me what it was like there. And, you know, there was calls for rain, and there was some rain today. And the guy that I was talking to who ran the pharmacy said, it was fine. Give me a cold one. Let me sit on the lanai and look out at the water. That's what he said. And it's all good because we have not been anywhere. So I could relate to that. And we know, you know, we look at COVID, there's some more hotspots that are certainly bubbling up, and 560,000 people have died. Speaking of that, Walter Mondale, actually two of you got an email, so you must have been emailing me later, but it was breaking news. I'm going to go to your questions about that. This one is from TJ, who says, Kate, Fritz, vice president, ran for president unsuccessfully, was by all accounts pretty decent dude, and he has died, I guess, at the age of 93. Not sure if you knew that or not, and what do you think his place in history is? You know what his place in history is? It's, of course, VP under Carter, doesn't win, gets crushed when he runs for president, but he served as a U.S. ambassador to Japan, and he was also part of an important envoy, and some people I think have mentioned this in the past, to Indonesia when under the Clinton administration. And his last race was in 2002. He served as Minnesota's DFL Senate candidate. He filled the ballot position of the late Senator Paul Wellstone, who died before the election in October of that year. He was beaten pretty easily in the race by Republican, that I recall, Norm Coleman. So he lived a long life, and when he lost that race, he went back to practicing law. He taught at the University of Minnesota, and in the last couple of years, I guess he's had some significant health issues. He underwent a heart surgery about 6-7 years ago. I remember that. So he's preceded in his death by his wife, Joan, who died in 2014, but RIP to Mondale. And a couple of others you have also asked about Mondale, so kind of the same thing. What was his claim to fame? What did I think? And this one from Gary Carter, to me, was an okay president. I think that Fritz did him favors because, in a good way, because he was well liked by so many people, and I know my dad was on the Hill, and so I'll just add to that. Yeah, he was Carter's number two between 77 and 81, but his time as vice president came to an end when Ronald Reagan and his running mate George H.W. Bush defeated Carter and Mondale in 1980. And the Democrats, remember, didn't recover from that till 1992 when Clinton won and the Democrats got control back of the White House. So, you know, there you go. Let's move on to something different. Let's move on to this one. This one is from Joseph, listening to us in New Orleans. And Joseph says, Chauvin trial, Kate, looking at the three charges and with the jury out, what do you think they come back with? And I know you certainly don't know. You're making a guess like everybody else in looking at these cases. I mean, this case and how it was tried. What do you think? It's tough. I mean, here's what I think. Just from looking at it from the perspective of what do I think the jury is going to come back with, I think you got three charges against him. So making that clear, three charges. And the key question is, and it's going to be what the jurors are going to deliberate about to render this verdict. What do they have to decide? A couple of things. They have to interpret Minneapolis police policies. They have to look at Floyd's cause of death and what the specifics are of the language of the law. And, of course, Derek Chauvin has pled not guilty to charges of second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. If it's manslaughter, then that charge alleges that Chauvin caused Floyd's death by culpable negligence, whereby the person creates an unreasonable risk and consciously takes chances of causing death or great bodily harm. Each of the three charges, of course, require the prosecution, which they did their case, I think, pretty well, to prove that Chauvin's actions were not objectively reasonable and they were a substantial cause of Floyd's death. But the charges differ in how they interpret intent and mindset. So that's why I set that up in the beginning as to what they have to determine. And the actual sentence, what would that be like? Because he has no prior convictions, Minnesota's sentencing guidelines recommend about 12 and a half years in prison for each murder charge and about 4 for the manslaughter charge. The judge would ultimately decide what length and whether they be concurrent or not. But this is one that everyone's watching. It's being streamed all over the place. People are talking about it. I always say this show is about what's happening in your backyard and what's happening in mine. And guess what? This is what's happening in my backyard and yours as well. All right, let's do one more. All right, this one, or maybe two. We might be able to get to him. But anyway, this one is from Susan, and Susan says, Kate, I laughed when you were talking about Aaron Rodgers doing Jeopardy and whether or not he would become the Jeopardy host. Do you really think that they're going to give it to Aaron Rodgers, or are you just having fun with it? I don't really think they're going to give it to Aaron Rodgers, but they could. I mean, they could do anything. How do you fill the shoes of Alex Trebek? I had a great conversation with my wonderful aunt, who I had a chance to see in Florida, and she's a longtime Jeopardy watcher. I have only watched here and there. And she says she remembers in the beginning when Alex Trebek was a little awkward, and then he just kind of grew into it, and he grew on you, and you know, you liked him, and you liked the way he handled the questions and the contestants and all of that. So I thought her observation was interesting. Do you give it to the best person who performed the best when they were posting for a week or 2 weeks or however long it was? Or do you do something out of the box, which in Aaron Rodgers would be something out of the box? I mean, what direction do you go in when you're replacing a legend? Tough to replace a legend. Sometimes it's the person after the legend, too, after that does better. Anyway, it's a wrap. We're heading to Samuel Merritt. Thanks for all those emails, and hang loose, everyone.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe hand sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American made with American ingredients, employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus. That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout. Right now, click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1 liter bottle of high-quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus, a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours, free, 2020safe.net.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
Jurors have been sequestered after beginning deliberations in the Derek Chauvin trial. Closing statements wrapped up late Monday afternoon as the prosecution and the defense made their final arguments in the trial of the former police officer charged with murder in the death of George Floyd. Chauvin is charged with second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. If convicted of the most serious charge, second-degree murder, the former police officer faces up to 40 years in prison. And former Vice President Walter Mondale has died, according to a statement from his family. Mondale served under President Jimmy Carter after spending 12 years in the U.S. Senate. He made his own run at the White House in 1984, unsuccessfully challenging President Ronald Reagan. In his later career, he served as ambassador to Japan under President Bill Clinton. Walter Mondale was 93. This is USA Radio News. Florida's governor has signed a new law cracking down on violent protests in his state. Tim Berg reports.
Florida Republican Governor Ron DeSantis is signing an anti-riot bill into law. The governor saying the new law will enhance penalties for those who commit crimes during a riot and also stop a theory of local governments defunding law enforcement.
If a local government were to do that, that would be catastrophic and have terrible consequences for their citizens. And so this bill actually prevents against local governments defunding law enforcement. We'll be able to stop it at the state level.
From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
And the Coast Guard is calling off the search for the missing sailors from the lift boat that capsized off the coast of Louisiana last week in a severe storm. 19 crew members were aboard the 129-foot vessel Secor Power when it capsized. 6 people were rescued alive and 5 bodies have so far been recovered. You're listening to USA Radio News.
There's a guy named Dr. Wallach who is anything but your typical doctor, both a veterinarian and a naturopathic physician. Doc asks, why is this country spending more money on healthcare by far and ranking 50th in health and longevity worldwide? Doc believes that people should empower themselves with a basic understanding of nutrition, taking charge of their life, and attaining optimal health and longevity through nutrition, not by toxic pharmaceutical drugs that lead to side effects that require more expensive and toxic pharmaceutical drugs. Talk about being dependent on drug companies to our own destruction, no less. This is clearly a deadly recipe. Doc Wallach's message is resonating with an increasing number of Americans who are waking up to all the government and big pharma manipulation of our health and healthcare system. I like what Doc Wallach is saying and doing to enlighten people about healthcare, and I've joined forces with him to help this tireless crusader spread his message. Visit brightsideben.com and listen to Doc Wallach's deadly recipe lectures. It makes a lot of sense, and I invite you to join our Brightside Ben team. Go to brightsideben.com. That's www.brightsideben.com.
Joining us this time around on Author's Corner is Samuel R. Merritt, Sr. And he's written a couple of books, Images of the Heart. That's the first one, and Images of the Heart, The Author's Mind. Samuel, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
So let's talk about Images of the Heart. What's the book about?
Well, it was a series of poetry I had written over a recent period of time, because I used to write poetry when I was younger, but had a devastating experience, and I quit writing till I was challenged to enter a poetry contest. And, yeah, of course I won.
Yay! That's a good thing.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, in writing your poetry, I know that you and I talked off the air, and you draw from your life, of course, and this is mind-blowing. I want everyone to listen to this. How many people can claim this? You are the youngest of how many children?
16 children.
Wow.
8 boys and 8 girls, with only one set of twins in the mix from the same parents.
Wow. That's incredible. You know, you had sports teams right there. I mean, touch football. You're way better than the Kennedys. You have way more people. I love it. I mean, what an interesting family to grow up with that many siblings. Do you think that influenced some of your inspiration, maybe kind of floated into your poetry in later years that you maybe not thought about?
May have had a part to do with it. because growing up, being the youngest, when I ended up going to school, I would run into teachers that had some of my brothers and sisters. And, of course, them being a different person, teachers would say, oh, so-and-so's your brother or so-and-so's your sister. And I says, well, don't they know my name? You know, because as soon as they hear the name Merritt, they would associate me with one of them. And one day I had a teacher says, oh, I hope you're more like this one. I hope you're not like that one. And another said, oh, I know what I can expect from you. And I had to tell the teacher, can I be me? And I actually spent my life trying not to be like any of my brothers and sisters.
Right, because of the family name, because of so many, that's the comparisons, absolutely. You know, you talk about in your book that a lot of times each poem tells a story on its own, and sometimes it's something simple, some comment from somebody that gives you the inspiration to write. Explain that.
Well, the first one that I did that with, I was at work and had to go to our copy office, and I heard a couple of young ladies, one of which who I knew, was saying, oh, they were still single, what are you looking for in a man? And one they said, oh, I'm waiting for my knight in shining armor. Well, a knight was something I was always interested in being in. In fact, I chose my high school. The mascot was a knight. And so I started to think, well, I know about the knight, but these are damsels in distress. I say, let me tell their story in relationship to the knight they are looking for.
There you go. I like it. And see how you twisted that around. You thought in using the creative side of what you do when you write a poem and then something that you overhear with the conversation. Very, very interesting. I think it's neat how a poem develops and then how the words actually get on the page. So now you have, you know, the two books, as I said, Images of the Heart, The Author's Mind. What's different about The Author's Mind? Is it a continuation?
Well, it's actually an explanation of each poem because it started me with another poem. Co-worker I was working with saying, oh, we're in English and I'm taking poetry and I don't know how to get started. And I thought, well, you come out with an idea. You think of something, then try to tell them what it is you're thinking of without actually saying it. And I thought of something simple, and I says, what do you think of when I say, you heat me up, you cool me down, you are what makes me go around? And she says, well, that sounds like a relationship between a man and a woman. I said, not necessarily. What I was thinking of was Mother Earth.
Ah.
The Earth heats you up. The Earth cools you around. And because you're on it, it is spinning in a circle and going around the sun.
I like it. And you're right. That might not be what you necessarily think of, but you just took me back to school. That's one of the first fascinating things I learned when I was in geography class. Absolutely. And you know what's interesting about poetry for people listening? There's poetry contests and stuff. People get challenged, and you said that at the start of this, to write poetry. And you were somebody who wrote in school. You wrote quotes down. You had a composition notebook. And you wrote a poem called A Token of Love, and it won first place in A Dinner for Two. Not too bad. Then you must have realized, and you changed the title later, but you must have realized, maybe I have something here.
Yeah. Well, actually, because I went back to the reason I thought of the poem, because it was a Valentine's Day contest, and payday was the day after Valentine's Day. And I said, oh, what can I get for my wife that I know she would love? And I thought of, oh, she loves roses. So I wrote the poem describing each aspect of the rose as it went down. And I thought, I reason I call it a token of love because I wanted the rose to represent just a small portion of my love for her. But
it's tough for any man out there listening to top that.
Well, see, I had a bit of help. Because I go to church, I read the Bible. If you've ever read the Songs of Solomon, the way he writes, he related his love for his wife to different things of nature.
And there you go. And then that makes sense in bringing that around.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. What do you hope people take away from reading both of these books, both of these collections of poems?
Well, the kind of motto I said I should have put that in the book, but I usually use it when I sign books. The first book, I'm letting you see my heart. These are the things I feel. But the second book, The Author's Mind, I'm letting you read my mind, what I was thinking of, what these things represented in my mind. So I'm drawing you a picture because I was telling somebody sometimes what you see isn't actually what is happening.
Mm.
Like Paul Harvey used to have a story, The Rest of the News.
Yep, The Rest of the Story, yeah.
Yeah. Because I know of a personal experience. I could have been in a lot of trouble, but when they found out the rest of the story, I then became a hero. I was found on an office desk holding a lady on top of me, laying back. And she was crying and screaming. And that's when everybody came into the office. And that's what they saw.
Mm.
Of course, needless to say, that's sexual harassment. You're fired. You're out of here.
Right, right.
But then, because the young lady, I let her go, and she ran out, and one of the other females went with her. And I'm glad she came back because, I mean, as they say, they were ready to hang me.
Yeah.
But the lady found out what had happened. It was the secretary. She was being harassed by her ex-husband, calling up, calling her names. And he apparently knew how to push her buttons. And she got up to run out of the office. But in running around her desk, she tripped over a phone cord.
Oh,
and started falling head first into the point of the desk.
And you caught her.
Well, I jumped between her and the desk, but because she was stumbling forward, I got head-butted in the stomach, which, of course, knocked the wind out of me.
Yeah.
But I still grabbed hold of her, and we fell back on the desk.
Right.
And that's what made all of the noise that made everybody come running.
Yeah.
But because I was out of wind, I was still trying to get myself together before I had let her go.
Yeah. Boy, there's a lesson in that. There's no question about that. I'm glad you told us that story. It is about a picture tells a story. Sometimes it's knowing what's behind it. Images of the Heart, The Author's Mind, Samuel Merritt Sr., thank you so much.
All right. You're welcome.
This is
Kate Delaney, and I have a confession to make. I'm addicted to journaling. So many of the ideas I get from my radio show or books hit me at weird times, and I need to write them down. Does that happen to you? So I decided to create my own journal with my pal Jackie. Looking for a great gift for your wife, sister, mother, aunt, friend, or boss to end 2020 or kick off 2021? My girlfriend's gratitude journal includes inspirational quotes and loads of room to write, and it just dropped. Here's the best part. You'll also get a copy of my Forbes book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Increase your odds, win big, and become extraordinary. It's loaded with ways to chart your own life and filled with the success habits with some of the biggest names on the planet, stuff they shared with me that can help catapult you. Here's the best part. For both hardcover books, it's just $29.99. Yep, go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer. Again, all of it for just $29.99. I got the shipping covered. What are you waiting for? Just go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hey everybody, if you've ever thought about heirloom beans as a storable survival food, I've got great news. In fact, I'll bet it's the best news you've heard in a while. Here's the thing. We've just received a fresh batch of gourmet heirloom beans, survival soup beans. These beans are gorgeous, highly nutritious, and above all, with no hesitation whatsoever, the best tasting beans in the entire world. The best part? We dropped the price by 33% this week for listeners who know higher food prices are coming and want an inflation hedge you can actually eat if you want to. Gets even better. With your permission and with the high regard for your health and well-being, I also want to send you 2 pounds of what we think is the single most underrated superfood in the world, period. Go to soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com, and discover the real reason we're giving this unusual superfood away. At soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
Do I have a treat for you today? Jeremy Goring joins us now, and he's in the UK. He, in fact, is in lovely Sussex, and he has tackled such an interesting subject. And after talking with him off the air, I can understand why. He's written a book called Antonio Machado, The Authentic Voice of Spain. And I think there's a lot that people don't know about Machado, and that was part of the idea of him doing this book, plus the fact that he's a very smart former history teacher. So he has that quest for knowledge, I believe, and that led him to Mr. Machado. So, Jeremy, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, Zach, thank you for having me.
Let's talk about the road to Antonio Machado. What got you there? Why did you write this book?
Well, my daughter went to teach teach English in Madrid. And we used to go there twice a year. And we would go on trips into the country, the north of Spain. And we went to a province called Soria. And a very beautiful place. And when we were there, Rosemary, my wife, said, "Oh, this was the countryside of Antonio Machado." So I said, "Antonio who?" And she said, "Machado." She said, "He's the most famous poet in Spain." But I hadn't heard of him, but she had, because she had studied Spanish language and literature at university. And so then I wanted to know more about it. And some years later, my daughter said to me, "Oh, Dad, what would you like for Christmas?" And I thought, I said, "Well, I would like a biography of Antonio Machado." And I expected a kind of slim, kind of paperback, sort of school textbook kind of thing. And to my surprise, this great fat volume, 800 pages full of pictures, illustrations and everything, charts and maps. And it was by Ian Gibson, who was an Irishman living in Madrid. And he'd written this massive book, which it took me about a year to read because I didn't know much Spanish.
And so you tackle this subject, and in your research you find out fascinating things about Machado. What do you think is the one thing that people don't know about Machado?
Well, the one thing I think they probably don't know is his involvement in the Spanish Civil War, because he was too old to fight, but he said, "I will fight the fascists with the sword, with the pen, you see." And so he wrote a lot, he made speeches and broadcasts and so on. But the thing was that his brother, Manuel, who was another famous poet, he was on the other side. And so it was a sort of split in the family. So I think that's probably what people don't know so much about his sort of later life.
Yeah, that he was willing to, as you started to make that analogy about the pen became the sword against Franco, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fascinating that, you know, what he was able to accomplish with his words. And what is it about his poetry? What started him on that path of being such a good poet?
Well, he didn't start really until he was about, his brother became the famous before him. And he wanted to, he sort of caught up with his brother. And then he started to think about his own childhood. And he had thoughts about his childhood. And the memories of his childhood came flooding through. And it came through as poetry. And so he was a poet, almost, without knowing it. And then he moved to the Soria, this beautiful place in the north of Spain, and he fell in love with the countryside. And he spent a lot of time walking through the countryside and loving all the trees, the birds, and the wildlife. And he wrote this lovely book called The Campos de Castilla, which is stories of his memories of his life in that lovely countryside. And that inspired him to become a sort of like a nature poet. But he was always, his mood changed so much, really. And then, tragedies came to him because his wife, she was only 15, he was 35 when they married, and she only lived for a few years, and so he went into mourning for a long time and had a lot of sadness. So there were poems about him. So all these poems are so full of feelings, such strong feelings, feelings about nature, but feelings about his own life and his sadness. And all this has come through so strongly in his words.
What do you think, Jeremy, his gift to Spain is?
His gift to Spain? Well, that's a very interesting question. He's given them... a man who's so famous that he's a tourist attraction. you go to Soria and you can't move without him. Also, there's a Machado Trail, which is the principal tourist attraction in that city. And it's signposted in English as well as Spanish. And there were statues of him. You fall over statues of him in the street. And everybody who comes there, Americans and English visitors. So he is a great tourist attraction to those who know about him.
Yeah, and he certainly was, he was one of the leading figures of the Spanish literary movement, and that was known as what, the Generation of 98.
Right, that's right. Indeed, there was a great number. He came at the tail end of that, really. He was one of the younger ones. But there was a great flowering, literary flowering, and he was part of that. And he went to France and met some of the famous Spanish poets. But he eventually, he himself became, the best-known poet in the whole of Spain, the most loved poet. The children would recite his verses in schools as they do today.
Boy, that is true. What do you hope people take away from reading Antonio Machado, The Authentic Voice of Spain?
Because there were other voices in Spain. In the time of the Civil War, the loudest voices were those on Franco's side. And his brother Manuel used to broadcast in support of Franco. And then you see there was a radio program called Voz de España, the Voice of Spain, and Antonio broadcast on that one. And so he was championing the true Spain, the Spain which was free from all these foreign entanglements, because the Spanish Civil War wasn't really a civil war. It was it was an anticipation of the Great World War, because the Italians and the Germans both supported Franco, and it became an international war. So he became a sort of national hero because he stood up for Spain, which was being invaded by these foreign elements.
Yeah. What was your family's reaction to a comment that led to a gift that led to you creating this book?
Well, I don't know. I disappeared. I mean, I used to get up at 5 in the morning to write it, because I wrote my best then. So it didn't impinge too much on the life of the rest of the household. I took over the cooking so that my wife could do some writing in the evening. So it didn't impinge too much, but they were very supportive. And of course, every time we went to Spain, we were supported by my daughter Maggie and her husband Jose, and it became a great sort of family interest, really.
I love that. It's a perfect place to end this. Antonio Machado, The Authentic Voice of Spain. You will learn a lot about maybe a man you didn't know enough about, especially here in the States. And if you go to Spain, Jeremy's right. You would definitely see that he is a tourist attraction. Jeremy Goring, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening to this version of the show. Make it count, everybody.
DrinkSuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea helps regenerate new cells. Everything from the cells in our skin to the cells in our organs, so they function properly. Great for healthy people and can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a disease. A 1-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.
As the coronavirus crisis continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, "It's never too late to be who you might have been." Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com.